Every week, the local paper is read to catch up on local events. Illustrations play a not insignificant part in the makeup of the Ely Standard, the full-time photographer of which is Nick Lyons.
You must be absolutely sick of going around fates and competitions. Is that right?
Yes, yes, that's quite right. And in fact, they've only just started, really, this year. But there are, in fact, about four fates on this afternoon, two of which I was supposed to be covering, but I've just done a wedding. I'm also sick of weddings, I might add.
Yeah.
But weddings make more money than doing fates for the newspaper. So I have a friend out covering two of the fates for me. I'm covering one myself. And I think that's quite enough for Saturday afternoon.
In the newspaper, it always has your name underneath the pictures. I mean, our listeners can't see them, obviously. Mm. So, really, there's more Nick Lyons. There's more than one Nick Lyons going around.
No, no.
Was that a trade secret?
No, no. This is not true. And, yeah, it is switched on. Yeah, this isn't true because the pictures which are taken for me by friends, I don't put my name on the back of, and therefore they're not... I'm not credited with the name.
I see. But you had a little bit of a dangerous mission about a fortnight ago. You made front page.
Yes, I did. I believe I was on the front page with Princess Margaret and got a bigger headline than she did.
That was because a ball hit you?
Yes, a ball hit me in the face. In fact, I was covering... It wasn't really a football match. It was sort of a youth club, like, penalty-kicking competition. And I was standing behind the net, taking pictures of people in the goal saving the balls.
Mm.
And being a very low six-a-side net, I suppose my head was above it. And every time I was taking a picture, the chap was saving it, well, the ball was going in the net, and it was quite okay. But sadly, on the last occasion, the ball came sailing over the net directly to where I was standing with a camera pushed up against my eye, and the ball hit the camera and sort of pushed it into my face.
But I understand that to compensate you for this, they've invited you back to a party.
Yes, they've invited me to the sports function was organised for Littleport Youth Club by Ely Lyons, and I've now been invited by the warden of Littleport Village College to attend their youth leaders' party at the Cromwell Restaurant later on this month. And I've also been told to leave my camera at home, and the note said that my personal safety was guaranteed.
Mm. I know you're a wedding photographer as well, aren't you?
Mm, yeah.
Do you ever get fed up with telling people to smile? And
yes, I do, but I'm sure they get even more fed up with me telling them to smile.
Do you find that there's a lot of aggravation with people for photographs? Are they hard to track down, you know?
What, on a wedding?
No, not, for the newspaper I'm talking about now.
For the newspaper, I mean, say we have a Saturday afternoon like this with four fates on, all of which are expecting to be covered. They all have very similar events. This particular one where we are now is a donkey derby, so that's fairly easy to get a different picture.
You recently had about seven of your pictures appear in the Ely Standard about Princess Margaret at the Ely Museum. Was she a difficult subject to take photographs for?
Well, obviously, with a member of the royal family or anybody like that, one can't do the normal press photographer thing and go up to them and say, well, can you just stand there and look into this camera, and could you just look as if you're taking an interest in this particular thing, and could we just stand you over here now? One can't do it. One's told beforehand, and is briefed very heavily about it. You must be 10 feet away at least. I believe it's 10 meters on some occasions.
It must be very difficult as well.
It's very difficult, and also you're competing with probably anything up to a dozen other press photographers from national newspapers too, and it's very cut and thrust.
Hmm. But you managed to push away.
Yeah, so it's just a question of taking an awful lot of pictures.
One of the rarest occupations in the region is that of peat digger. Harold Sennett from Wiccan Fen is such a one, and he has appeared on Anglia Television's Bygones programme.
I've been on the telly 20 times.
Have you?
Well, if they count them all up.
Yeah.
Been on Walls 5 times.
Let's have a look
there's
at that.
There's some little photos.
Fingers can eat that going. You're actually digging the peat here, then?
Yes. No, not... that one.
Mm.
You see, this peat here is a different colour. Well, this has been dug. Well, my mate got the paper shop at Ely.
Yeah.
I think they sold it here on the marketplace there. He come down taking photos.
Oh, I know that.
And that was a little bit dull. And so he wanted me to face to the sun And I dug one or two there, just to face of the sun, really. But you'll see.
You've dug that in a very long, narrow strip, yeah? Is that what you've dug out, is it, to get the
peat? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And, I mean, do you actually have to shape it when you cut it? I mean, you go so many spits down.
Yeah, I've been digging this morning.
Have you?
Well, that was a block of peat.
Yeah, you're digging out and stacking
it. Peat, and, of course, it ain't dry.
No.
But you cut that up in the blocks.
Yeah.
Put it down, put some decoy ducks down.
Yeah.
And set fire to them blocks, and the smoke attracts the ducks. And, of course, you know they have little dogs trained to drive them into the nets.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what the man does, he'll get a block of peat and set fire to it. And when it's smouldered, of course, that don't flare. And he rubs it all over himself.
Yeah.
Because a duck is like a dog.
Yeah.
It's got the
sense of smell.
Of like a dog.
Has it really? I never knew that.
So they rub this here over him, and that takes him and sent away.
How long does a piece of peat, how long would that burn, if you know?
Well, that depends on the fire. There, I'm saving that for potting.
Yeah.
Is that heavy to dig?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, what's the best time to dig it? When wouldn't you dig peat?
Well, you wouldn't dig in the winter time. Of course, they used to start digging in April.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they let you dig the peat down
well,
here,
do damn us our own land.
Oh, I see, yeah. And what about the teller? How did you, Dick Joyce, get to know you about the, for bygones, then?
Damn, I haven't known him donkeys yet.
Have you?
Yeah.
And he made this film about you a few years ago, didn't he? Or a couple of years ago, the bygone
78.
Special. 78, that's what I thought.
They were filming me 2 days.
Yeah.
So they had plenty, and I should think, it says in there that it's gone out of parts, so I should think they perhaps made other films up out of that.
Yeah, well, more than likely. But, I mean, through them televising it, did you hear from people all around the country?
Yes, all over the world I've got people right.
So what was the biggest thing they wanted to know about? How you dug it out, or...?
Well, yes, in a way. I've got in Canada and America, I've got some peat there and blocks of bog oak.
Yeah.
And then I've been in magazines and that, you see. And they got some of the books in there about me.
Mm-hmm.
And people come in and they're on the counter for people to read. And then they don't take them away.
No.
And then it's that type of people who write to me.
It is a long step from Islington to Ely. The journey was made in 1936, but not on foot, by Anne Harding when her life as a Salvation Army officer brought her to East Anglia.
The sister mentioned the fact that you'd actually gone without food yourself.
Oh, well, the money was very, very scarce. And, you see, headquarters are supposed to send you money, but very often they didn't. One weekend I had some friends arrive. I had got nothing in the house at all that weekend. The money was 19 shillings a week.
Mm.
Well, they supposed to send that so that you got it on a Saturday morning. Well, sometimes you'd be a month and you wouldn't get it.
I mean, what I'm thinking now is I've never had to experience, thank God, never having food in the pantry or something to eat the next day, you know. I know that there's food going to be there. I mean, that must be a desperate situation for people when you don't know where your next...
Well, you see, the field officers, what you call the field officers, their money is never guaranteed. But the social work and the slum work, the assurance and all the other people, their salaries were guaranteed.
This is in the Salvation Army?
This was in the Salvation Army, but the field officers had the least wages. And as I say, in some places you're very destitute because you've got to pay the rent for the hall, the quarter, the house rent, which they called the quarters. The quarters rent would have to be paid. Lighting and heating and rates, or all of that sort of thing. And then what was left, you're supposed to have your salary. Well, they say sometimes it wasn't there.
Why was this? Why were the field officers not so well paid then?
Well, that was just the system. Army, the system. But today, I think their salaries are guaranteed. Mm. I don't think they have what the early Salvation Army officers went through.
Did you see things get better, though, while they were there?
Not when I was there, no. Not then.
So this would have gone on for a period
of
long time?
It's got better since after the war.
Yeah.
But, that went on. Lots of officers was in the same states as I was. Mm. And yet you got to clothe yourself, you got to pay your fares, you got to have your leave. But there was never any extra money sent to you to help you.
In those days, was there respect for the uniform and so
on? Oh, yes. When we went visit the public houses or visiting the people, they welcomed you. They were pleased to see you. And talking in the streets, people were pleased to see you. And very often when you gave, I never found it easy to say God bless you to the people.
No.
I found that most difficult because I've got to really mean what I was saying.
Mm.
And I used to find that, unless I really meant it.
Mm.
And but people were very pleased to see you. They would often talk about, when there was in the 1914-18 war, how much the army had helped them. Always a cup of tea, and the lines and the railway stations. So that people were very pleased to receive you. Mm.
Not infrequently, retirement hobbies lead to a full-time commitment. This has happened to Philip North of Littleport.
Over here we have various gulls that have been brought in. The little black-headed gull, a common gull, and a herring gull.
Is there any truth in the rumour that they come inland when it's stormy at sea?
Some come in, but lots of the black-headed gulls, quite often, I doubt they ever go to sea. They nest inland, so you see them following the plough all the winter, so they nest down on the Welney... they nest on the Welney Washes, and they also roost down there all the winter time.
Why don't the gulls fly away? Are they unable to fly?
They're unable to fly. They're wing damaged. Mm. In some cases, they have only one wing, where it's been broken off by hitting a cable or something like that. Mm. And some have got just a small piece off.
How do you go about treating something like that?
Well, if they're just normally broken, and it's just a quick fracture, and they haven't been too long, you can put a small splint on and quite often mend them again, and they take off in time. But where they've been done a long time, quite often the piece drops off before you get them. People pick them up, and it's been done a long time, so there's no hope of doing anything for them apart from keeping them.
When you enter a new bird into this group, how do they accept it?
Quite well, as a rule. If it's too big a bird, they're a little bit wary of it for a time, but it soon quietens down, and it's amazing how soon they get tame and will come up for food. Yeah.
Because you've got many varieties here. How do they mix in together?
Quite well. All the winter time, everything gets on very well, but it's when they get towards the breeding season, they begin to get a bit territorial, and they do bicker a bit, but never any damage.
What's the bird called with that lovely, almost looks like a carrot in front of its face, doesn't it?
A very orangey beak.
Oh, that's a red-crested pochard.
A pochard?
Yes. A diving bird.
Mm.
There's occasionally a few come to this country, but they're European birds chiefly, in the south of France and those places. They're quite numerous there.
Mm-hmm. I see one hopping
along. The common pochard come here quite often, but I don't have any here now. There were diving birds liking deep water, and I haven't the facilities for those,
no.
So I don't keep them.
I see there's one bird hopping about on one leg.
Yes, it's one of the waders. That's a typical wader attitude, perching on one foot. The gulls do it as well.
Hmm. Do you think there'll ever have to come a time when you'll have to say, no, I can't have any more?
Oh, well, obviously, I'm getting older all the time, and if ever I was ill, I don't know what would happen. Some of these would have to go somewhere, but that's for sure.
Because you've retired now?
Yes, yes.
This wasn't your profession, though, was it?
Oh, no, I was a heavy goods vehicle driver.
Were you?
Yes, 40 years.
Well, in doing that, I mean, obviously you were away quite a lot.
Yes, my wife looked after them then, while I was away.
Mm.
And quite honestly, until I'd retired and was here full time, I didn't realise the amount of work she had to do.
No.
Yes, she's been very good over the years with them. Well, she does them and knows as much about them as I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They keep your garden down quite a bit,
yes,
don't they?
We don't have to cut any grass.
No. You were telling me where we stand here, it was all grass.
Yes, but it dried out in, I think it was 1976, the last really hot summer we had, and the grass has never recovered from that time. And unless you shut it right off and re-sow it, there's no way it will do, because as soon as a blade of grass shows, the geese will have it.
Fenland characters would hardly be complete without one who has been connected with the dredging of the region's dikes and rivers. Mr. Golty of Littleport did just that for 30 years, and his wife had connections with the water too.
I think this is a funny question, but they were sitting on the dredger, right?
Yeah.
Operating the grab.
Yeah.
Now, what you're working with, the mud, is underwater, isn't it?
So yeah.
When you've taken your first grab,
yeah,
how do you know where to take the second one?
Oh,
because
well,
it's
yeah, see, for talk and sake, we'll say that's the front of your dredger. You're sitting here on the dredger.
Yeah.
You start there. Well, you know you ain't only got to go, we'll say, about one grab deep begin to sow it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next grab, you know, your grab is about 6 foot before wood.
Mm-hmm.
You know within a little bit of drop at the next time. And you go right across the half of the river, what you're doing, then after a bit you see you perhaps do half a mile up there all like that, then you drop back on the other side and take the other bit out.
Now when you cut the floor of the river, did that have a certain shape to follow?
But
with a certain decision?
Yes, that had that fleet against the river, and you, well, for talking sake, if you've got to go down, if you want to make 10 foot in the middle, well, on your wire rope, what you're holding your grab, you'd splice a bit of ribbon or string through there so you knew your depth, you see.
Yes,
you knew what depth you've got. You perhaps have a couple of bits of ribbon in. And you know the heights of your grab, so when you buried that the first time, again the bank, you'd got about 4 foot there, you see, as you kept going across, and after you dredged it, you'd got a gauge, a wooden pole, if you like, all marked up so many feet, you see.
Okay.
You'd keep sounding that across to see you got your depth. Yeah, that's how it was done.
The third photograph is...
That's the flood.
That's the 1947 flood. Where was that taken?
In front of my house on Station Road.
Good heavens. I mean, it...
You see?
It's like a giant lake, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that...
Well, it is a giant lake.
Yeah, that is a giant lake. All the railway were flooded. You couldn't get across the railway from Littleport to Ely, because that line run there. You see all these bags along the side of the road here? They was all put up to stop the water from coming over the road. They were all bung full of clay, all them bags. They was sacks of clay.
How did the local people react? Did they panic?
Oh, no, no. The only time they panicked was when Sudbury Fen got flooded.
Why was that?
That was all flooded.
that was all flooded from Brandon Creek right across there as far as you could see. That's what happened.
Did you get a boost? Did people say, you know, can't you get rid of this water any faster?
You see, the long and short of all this flood, there was so much argument.
With the farmers, what farmed on the Hoyland, they didn't think they should pay for water to be drained away as that come down from the Hoyland. I mean, that was flooding them, that was the flood water from the Hoyland, what was causing all this flooding the Fen.
But they couldn't see that.
No, they couldn't see it.
No.
But they see, in the finish, they had to pay. They had to pay for it all. Yeah. Yeah.
And how long did it actually take to get rid of all the water or to...
Well, that take about a fortnight to get real clear of it.
Because they had troops as well, didn't they?
Oh, they had some troops come down here, but they was only helping to fill some of the clay bags and things like that, you see. As they dredged them out of the pits at Ely, they had the troops there filling sacks and stacking them all in the barges so they wouldn't take so much lifting out. What, you ain't got no dredges then to lift them out, you see, because you couldn't move your dredges from under the bridges because the water was over.
I see. There's some more photographs now. Your wife keeps being silly.
That's on the station road.
Is that you standing against?
Yes, that's me standing there.
We should explain, you can see the road on the right-hand side.
Yeah, our house stood here, you see.
And you'd be lower than the...
Oh, yeah, we're a lot lower on the road.
When you went away on the Sunday night, and the water was coming up, it was on the Sunday night, and I had a daughter. You see her on the other photo, a little girl. And I said, what have I got to do if the water comes up? He said, well, open the front door and it'll run out the back. The back's lower. And on that Sunday night, I was up till midnight taking jam and pickles and everything upstairs. And what I could think of, you know, move myself and the piano would put on too.
Because you'd be alone as well, wouldn't you?
Yes, I was alone. And the house stood on its own. We've got neighbours each side. And that was one of the worst nights of my life. The people, you know, kept walking by and lorries and that. And I put my daughter to bed, but I didn't. I sit in his fireman's coat. I didn't do no other. And the wind got up and the fire. I had to let the fire out. But it was worse than ever any bombing. I weren't scared when the, you know, planes. Not so much as I was then. And I thought to myself, well, if it does come, it might wash the house over.
Yeah.
But it didn't get over the road, only, you know where the butcher shop is at Key Hill? It was there. It was right up to that butcher shop. We went in with planks.
I see. How deep would it be there, do you know?
Well, you see, there's a drain there, isn't there? Sort of a...
Oh, yes, there is.
And then, where's the
other one? I think there's over 2 foot of water. Again, you see,
this is when it was subsiding.
So you can't see where the river wind. Is?
No.
The river actually comes here, you see.
Oh, I see.
You know the pub, the Black Horse?
Yes,
well, that's over there.
Yeah.
You see.
You can see that in the distance.
Yes, yeah, that's that. You see, and this side, the Black Horse, was the railway, you see. And the night that filled up like that, that was took, I think, about... I don't know if it's about the Tuesday, perhaps, I don't know. But I could sit in my room and hear the water roaring over. You see, this was that much lower than the line, and I could hear it roaring all night.
Yeah, that did, until that levelled up, you see.
I never had a wink's sleep all night.
What were your thoughts when that photograph was taken? I mean,
well, it was subsiding.
It was going then, so?
It was going, you see. I knew he was at Ely, but I couldn't contact him.
Yeah. I had over a week away from home when
the floods were out. He looked, you know, all gulping. He hadn't had a shave. I didn't see anything like it. I cooked tea every night and threw it out.
Because he didn't
I didn't know if he'd come home.
I mean, he was away for a week. Did you have to pack him up?
Oh, yes, I packed him up. Yes, I packed him up. And he used to come home generally
in the middle of week.
And then I packed him up again. And then, of course, he didn't get home. They worked Saturdays in them days. You left off at 12, was it, or 1 Saturdays? He had a motorbike.
Yeah, 12, yeah.
For a bit, and then, of course...
Because you were telling me earlier on that you were born at 20 pence, well, what's known now as the 20 pence marina, between Wilburton and Cuttenham.
That's right, yes.
What was life like then? Because there wasn't a bridge, was there?
No, there was a ferry boat to go over the river, and which my grandfather owned, and I would be about, well, ever since I can remember, he used to put people over the river, and it used to be a penny per person, and we used to punt this river boat across, which weren't very wide in them days.
And but more if you had a bike?
Yes, tuppence then, you see. And people had to cycle. There was no cars, you see.
What was the road like then?
Cottenham Side, it was gravel. All fen drove and that. And Wilburton was harder. Mm. And I walked to Wilburton School 2.5 miles mornings.
It's a long way.
Had a packed lunch. Mm. Because we didn't get no milk or hot drink, we had to go to the pump and have cold water. And I used to walk home nights, but I'm afraid I didn't go much in the winter time.
Was there a lot of traffic? I mean, you said you had to ferry them across.
No, only people, if they was going to visit relations, you know, each side to a farm. There was a few farmhouses in the fen. No, horses and carts to do the work. You see, there was no tractors. And you see people ploughing and that. My grandfather lived at the pub, you see, which
he had that built, didn't he?
His father. So it'd be my great-grandfather, I think. Mm. My dad was born there. And I was born in the little white cottage just by the river.
That's the other side of the road now, isn't it?
Yes, what is white now. In them days, it belonged to Mr. Camps at Wilburton. Mm. And I lived there until I went to live at Cambridge. And Mum and Dad then moved to Wilburton.
Where did they get the custom from the pub? It must have been a very lonely place, was it?
Probably one or two from the outlying houses, you see, came nights. And it was an Iron Cope's house, you see.
Free house, you see.
And my grandfather or my dad used to go and fetch the beer in barrels from Wilburton Station every so often.
Don't shake it about that, I think.
Yes, and when the water came up in the winter, the house we lived in, if it was high water, the water washed the end of the house.
Yes,
we could look at our bedroom window and see the water.
Did it come in the house?
In the cellar. We had a cellar and it used to come in there. And I always remember once Mother going down the cellar and the water had risen in the night and she got in it.
Because since you've lived there, you were telling me that it's had, one famous owner, hasn't it?
Oh, yes, Lennon Satch,
Good old days.
Yes, long good old days, yes. But it was, you know, there wasn't any other houses, only these two for about a quarter of a mile.
Well, but the name 20 pence, I mean, was that the toll price? Did it ever get to 20 pence? Or
well,
was it known as 20 pence when you
were born?
Yes,
it was always named as 20 pence. Mm. And I think in years gone by, before the fen was drained, it was from Wilburton Hill to Cottenham. You see, the church at Cottenham stands on a bit of a hill.
Yes, it does.
I think that's the saying, as I can remember, that it was 20 pence from Wilburton Hill to Cottenham if anyone wanted to be
ferried across. I mean, that would have been quite a journey, wouldn't it?
It would be a distance of 5 miles, you see. It's be 2.5 to 20 pence from Wilburton and another 2.5 up to Cottenham.
The recording finishes with the sound of the £100,000 organ at Robinson College, the newest college in Cambridge University. It is being played by Gerald Gifford. Fenprobe had the distinction of being the first to record its majestic voice.